Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Hitchcock with the estate and asset protection planning firm Barth Calderon. Welcome to Wealth Protector TV. You might be listening on Wealth Protector Radio. I'm here with my colleague, Brian Chow, who's one of our in-house experts in estate and asset protection planning. Brian, am I coming out loud and clear?
I can hear you great, Paul.
Great. Well, for those of you who know us here, you know that we put on a ton of workshops across the country to many incredible organizations like the California Apartment Association, Vistage International. As a matter of fact, Brian, you and I were just up in the Bay Area in Oakland putting on a talk. You did a talk to the East Bay Rental Housing Association. So we get a lot of questions from investment property owners about the right way to own property, the structure of it. And so a question that came up, and Brian, I'm going to pass it over to you, is came to me recently and getting it over to you, is that an individual is wanting to invest in a rental income property. This is in the Bay Area, and they're doing it with a business partner. So they have somebody else, they're both pooling some money. And so her question was, what's a proper way to do this in conjunction with not only estate planning, but the asset protection side of things? So how would you address that issue?
Sure. So one is, if you're going to be purchasing rental property with a partner, it pays to have a plan in place. I think that the biggest thing that pops up is just making sure that you have an understanding with your client before you even start talking about, you know, purchasing a property, but really figuring out, okay, you know, what are we trying to accomplish? Are our goals aligned? And having an understanding about, hey, what if something goes wrong? How do we unwind this thing, right? Because before you even jump into a partnership with somebody, going into business with somebody, it's a big step. So you want to kind of do a little bit of the due diligence just from a personal standpoint and make sure, hey, is this somebody that I can get along with? Is this somebody that I can really see myself purchasing property with? And how do we have the ability to work through disputes and issues that we may have? Because if we do have disagreements about, how to set the rent or how to deal with a tenant eviction, or what if one of us needs to declare bankruptcy, or what if somebody is hard up for cash and they want to sell the property? How do we put the mechanisms in place to make sure that we can unwind this thing if there are disputes or issues down the road? Because a lot of times clients are in a hurry to do something or to buy something, but spending a little time up front to understand who you're getting into business with and how you might get out of business with them or how to deal with contingencies goes a long way.
Yeah, no, great call. And so you get on the same page, kind of your business plan and knowing the property, but then how do you structure that property? I mean, this person was talking about tenants in common, you know, ownership, but what do you do there?
Sure. So there are a number of ways that you can hold title to real estate. How you hold title, this is another thing that's hugely important, is kind of figuring out along with your business partner what your goals are, what your intent is with regards to this property, and structuring things accordingly. So one really common way that people hold title to assets with somebody other than themselves is with something known as joint tenancy. You've heard of that, right, Paul?
Right, yeah.
So joint tenancy is essentially a situation where you and your partner each own an undivided interest in this property together. And you each essentially own 100% of the property together, okay? As almost like one person. And so one of the features of joint tenancy is that the last person standing or the last people standing continue to own the property. So for instance, if I own it with my second cousin, Billy, right? if we own it as joint tenancy, then I'm entitled to use of 100% of the property, and so is Billy. And if anything happens to me, then Billy would continue to own the entirety of the property. Or if something happens to Billy, then I would own the entirety of the property. So so that's one way to hold title to real estate, but there are some negative consequences to doing that as well, right?
Well, there's no asset protection in that scenario, right?
That's correct. So one thing that's hugely important to know is that both Billy and I are 100% exposed to the liabilities emanating from that property, right? So if there's a tenant issue, let's say a tenant slips and falls and they break their neck on the property, and they allege that we were as the owners not negligent in managing that property, well, that liability can attach to Billy, and that liability can attach to me. So that's a really significant thing to be aware of here is that liability. There's no shield from that liability, not only for myself, but then also for all the other partners, all the other joint tenants in the property as well. And so that's hugely important whenever you think about purchasing property with somebody other than yourself, is really making sure you take steps to insulate yourself from that. So
that gets us where? Is that a limited liability company around the property?
Right. So one pretty simple solution to that issue is utilizing entities to limit the liability associated with those properties. Now, before we dive into that, I want to just briefly touch on also, Paul, some other ways that people hold title to property. Another common way is tenants in common, right?
Oh, right, right.
So a tenant in common would be a situation where instead of me and my cousin Billy each owning 100%, we would each own an undivided 50% interest in the property. So I would own 50%, and then Billy would own 50%. And so in this scenario, if I die, my portion doesn't automatically go to Billy, and Billy's portion doesn't automatically go to me. So in that regard, that's usually good, because if I'm holding title to somebody else, my intent probably oftentimes isn't going to be to give it to the person that I'm owning the property jointly with. My intent is, in my case, to leave my property to my wife or to my children, not necessarily to my business partner. And so in that regard, tenants in common is usually more reflective of each individual partner's wishes. However, one bad thing about tenant owning things as tenants in common is if something happens to me, let's say I pass away, those assets now have to be probated if I don't have the proper planning in place. So if I'm just holding it tenants in common with Billy and I die, right, I'm no longer alive to do anything with that property. So that property now has to go to court. So the court can determine who my rightful heirs are and where those assets are supposed to go, which can be a huge pain from a management perspective, right? If you're talking about Billy trying to sell the property or do anything with it while these assets are all tied up in court.
Interesting. So if you own it tenants in common and you pass away, even if you have like a living trust, it still goes through probate. Wouldn't your half filter through the trust, or is that not the case?
No, that's right. So that's a great point, Paul, because if I don't do anything, if I just own a property as tenants in common with my cousin, right, in my name and in his name, then yes, if something happens to me, then my half of the assets has to go through probate. But if I then turn around and I transfer that asset into my living trust, that's how we get around that issue, right? My living trust would then hold those assets even after I've passed away. And that succession plan has the legal mechanisms for my wife or my son to step in and manage those assets and to distribute everything the way that I want. But if I don't specify, then those assets are all subject to the probate court in the event of a passing. So those are just some considerations to think about, just on a very basic level, when we're talking about an investor thinking about purchasing property with a partner, right? On the very baseline level, how do you structure the way that you title those assets? And usually I would say, you'd want to have it held as tenants in common, but just having it in tenants in common isn't the end. You'd want to have some additional planning beyond that. One, from an estate planning standpoint, that property, that interest should probably be held in some sort of living trust,
Right.
And then the other aspect is, to your point, Paul, the asset protection, right?
Right.
Whether it's tenants or in common or whether it's joint tenants, we have the same issue. If there's a liability associated with that property, that liability can attach to the balance sheets or the net worth of both owners of the property. And if you have multiple owners beyond that, right, let's say a family of five siblings that inherited a property from mom in equal shares, right, that liability goes even further if there's a liability, right?
Right. Right.
So in that regard, when you own title jointly, almost always you're going to want to hold it in some sort of an entity. Usually that entity, if we're talking about passive buy and hold real estate, is almost certainly going to be an LLC. And so so an LLC is basically a business entity that we create to hold that that property or multiple properties, depending on how we set it up. And that the point of that is essentially to create a barrier so that any liabilities that occur within that LLC on a, let's say, a property that we put into this LLC, we can limit that liability to the assets of that LLC.
So when you create that LLC, so now you have two people there, can you have two managing members of the LLC, or do you just have one and the other one is a regular member? How does that work with two people?
That also depends on how you want to set it up. So the good news is you have a fair bit of flexibility in who gets to manage that LLC. You can have a distinction to be made here is when you set up an LLC, there are a number of roles that people play, right? One is the member of the LLC, which is the person who has an ownership interest in the LLC. And there are also managers. So people who are put in a position to act on behalf of the LLC legally, right? So if we think of it in the context of a business, the members would be the owners of the business, but they might not be running the day-to-day, right? The CEO would be the person that's, you know, signing contracts or hiring people or doing things within the LLC itself. So same thing, the members in the LLC are the owners, or they are the ultimate owners of the business, and the manager is the person who's legally in charge of acting on behalf of the business, right?
Is there,
so signing the rental agreements, leasing out the property, or hiring the property managers.
Is there more liability associated with the manager of the LLC versus just the member?
So that depends, right? So the whole idea behind the LLC is you want to limit the liability from the business or from the properties from attaching to the assets of the members, right? So that's what we're trying to do, is to try to say, okay, the assets that we're putting into this LLC, we don't want that liability to be able to slip out of that property or to slip out of that entity and attach to the ownership interests of the members.
So there's no more liability being the manager of the LLC versus being just a member. So if there's two people, there's no reason for one of them to say, oh, I don't want to be the manager because there's more liability with that. That's not the case.
Generally, no. Okay. Now the manager would be the one in charge of taking the day-to-day actions with regards to the LLC. So in that regard, there might be potentially some liability, but generally speaking, no. Right. So the manager is, again, just the person entrusted with taking the day-to-day actions on behalf of the LLC.
Okay. So it's just more responsibility, it sounds like. But in this scenario, the right conclusion here for asset protection is get it into the right LLC. And I hear you talk about all the time that just because the property is in California doesn't mean you need to have a California LLC. It can be outside of California for different purposes, maybe more asset protection. But the takeaway is, get it into the right LLC, but also make sure you have your estate planning that's integrated with the asset protection. Would you say that's a fair statement?
Yes. So that's a fair statement. I'd say on a very basic level, whenever somebody is purchasing property with a partner, for one, definitively, I could say it's important to have that situation reviewed with a qualified professional. Make sure you're talking with your accountant and your attorney to plan for what happens with all this stuff, right? Because there is no necessarily one size fits all for everybody. Everybody's a little bit different. But in most cases, I would say having that property in some sort of an LLC is a great first step from an asset protection standpoint. And then also making sure that those membership interests in those LLCs are held in some sort of estate planning entity like a living trust also really helps from a succession standpoint.
Because isn't it true that if you have a lousy LLC, so you buy the property, if you have a lousy LLC, you set it up improperly, you're not maintaining it properly, if nothing ever happens, it's almost like earthquake insurance. If you never have an earthquake, who cares if you have really lousy insurance? It won't matter. It's when life throws your curveball where your LLC gets tested, when people say, uh-oh, I hope I did it the right way. I mean, is that a good way to look at it?
Yes. So thank you for that. So that is the reason why it's important to have qualified advice in setting this stuff up, because you're absolutely right, Paul. So setting something up on your own, let's just say on LegalZoom, right? There are a lot of things that pop up when people set up LLCs. A lot of times they assume that's really easy to do, right? All I'm doing is I'm just filing some paperwork with the state, and then everything's fine. Then I'm an operating business and I can do whatever I want, and it's real simple, and I only paid a couple $100. But in my practice, I've found that there's so much more to setting up and maintaining these LLCs and these other entities in a way that makes sense to maximize the benefit for the client. There are a lot of things that can go wrong, right? Setting it up properly, maintaining it properly. Are you following the rules that California has set in order for this LLC to continue to be active? Are you respecting the business or the entity as a separate business, or are you treating it like your own piggy bank? Are you making sure the business is adequately capitalized? Does it have an operating agreement? Are you following the rules of that operating agreement? Are you making loans to yourself without taking adequate interest? Are you taking a bunch of tax deductions that you aren't supposed to be doing? Right, all of these things, if you don't respect the existence of the entity as its own being separate from you, and you don't treat it like a legitimate business, the more likely it is that a creditor, let's say, again, we have that tenant lawsuit, that tenant is going to be able to pierce the corporate veil, right? So piercing the corporate veil just means, right, we have this little Tasmanian devil within the shoebox, right, or within the LLC, and they're trying to pop through that protective coating that LLC has, right? So what they'll likely say is, hey, you haven't been maintaining this thing properly, or, hey, this property isn't even properly funded into the LLC, right? They're going to look for any reason to say, hey, you know, this LLC isn't its own separate business. It's really just Brian, or it's really just Paul masquerading as a business, right? And so it's really important to make sure that, one, it's set up right, that you have qualified counsel to make sure that you stay on the straight and narrow. And as things pop up, we can make adjustments to ensure that your ducks are all in a row, so that when that time comes, you know, when that earthquake comes, or that or when that dreaded tenant lawsuit comes, that everything is set up properly so that we minimize the possibility that anyone's going to be able to come after your assets personally.
Right. No, I was going to say, you know, as usual, great information, great takeaways there. And so thanks for coming on. Great episode. And for all of you listening, we'll see you next time. Thanks again, Brian.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
All right.